Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, it's time for the Medical Association of Georgia's Top Docs Radio Show, which is made possible with a grant from Healthcare Research, a subsidiary of Alliant Health Solutions. Visit MAG.org and follow MAG on Twitter and Facebook at MAG1849 to find out why MAG is recognized as a leading advocate for physicians in Georgia.
I'm here at the Academy of Managed Care Pharmacy Conference in Denver, Colorado, and I had the opportunity to sit down today with Susan Cantrell, CEO of the organization, to learn a little bit about some of the current focus for the organization and its members coming up in this year and going into the future. I know there's a few topics, Susan, that are really on top of mind, one of which we were just talking about before we jumped on here was looking at changes that are being looked at around how we reimburse for medications and making those rates of pay for various drugs dependent upon the outcomes of the patients that are taking those medications. That's a pretty interesting concept.
It is. It is. It's actually a concept that first arose a couple of decades ago, remarkably, but didn't gain a lot of traction. But certainly now in the current environment where the rising cost of pharmaceuticals and the rising amount of the healthcare spend that is devoted to pharmaceuticals continue to increase and are part of the national debate, then the managed care pharmacy audience is certainly looking for more innovative ways to pay for these pharmaceuticals. And part of that is what we call either outcomes-based contracting or value-based contracting. It's been an important theme of our meeting this week, and we have a number of experts in the area that have done some very innovative contracting, but pretty much the way it works is what they're paying is based upon achievement of the outcomes that they expect to see with some of the more innovative and high-cost specialty pharmaceuticals.
And I assume that the way that will work is very similar to the way hospitals and physician practices and other healthcare providers are reimbursed today when they're taking care of CMS patients and other federally funded programs, that they have to demonstrate a level of consistent improvement towards, you know, a number of markers. I assume those similar concepts are going to be applied here around understanding that there's certain, you know, numbers of patients and statistically that may or may not respond to a medication, but all that being taken in, if the patients aren't getting better, then we won't pay as much for the medication.
That's exactly right. Value-based payment mm-hmm. is where we're headed. It's what it's all about. We're moving away from fee-for-service and into an era where we're paying for something that delivers value. And in order to determine if it delivers value, you have to have agreed upon outcomes that you expect to see. And if you don't see those, you pay less.
Where is it in its evolution?
I would say we're very early in the evolution of this process. In fact, high on our priority list for the second quarter of this year is to conduct what we at AMCP call a partnership forum, mm-hmm. where we bring together a group of stakeholders who are experts in a particular area, a problem or issue that's arising in the managed care world, and have that group help us shape our strategy on addressing it. So we have a partnership forum that we're scheduling in June of this year on the topic of value-based contracting. And that is really to help our members work in that area. More information is needed. We have a few leaders out there that have done some very innovative work in this. Some of them were featured at the meeting this week. We want to share that and likely create some guiding principles, if you will, around how you do this.
I know that a lot of the time the way we get at some of those types of changes is by doing pilots and assessing, you know, does this work? Is that where we're at right now? Are we putting together some of those types of kind of trials or what sorts of resources are they looking for to be able to move this forward?
I think just more information and examples. We certainly learn by examples, as you mentioned, pilots. So we're not quite there yet, but we do have examples of areas where this has been being done successfully. For example, just before we came to the meeting, we saw an article in the Boston Globe featuring some of the work that's being done at Harvard Pilgrim
right.
on outcomes-based contracting with pharmaceutical companies. And the session that we had yesterday morning at the meeting meeting featured the work of Harvard Pilgrim. So there are some pockets where this is being done and being done well, and we hope that we can share those with our broader audience.
I'm sure a lot of people stepped in to see what they had to say.
Oh, it was standing room only.
And talking about pilots, something that caught my eye on a piece that you had written about some of the things that we're going to be focusing on at the conference was looking at enhanced MTM and looking at how we approach that particular facet of evaluating a patient's medication regimen and how are they responding and are they being compliant, et cetera. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And I'll say that we were so honored to have and fortunate to have here this week an official from the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, CMMI, which is running the enhanced MTM pilot or model project. We've been very involved in that at AMCP. We have a group that we call our Medication Therapy Management Advisory Group that's been involved. Some of those leaders in that group are part of the pilot or the model project. So it's really looking at more innovation in the area of medication therapy management for Medicare Part D recipients to improve their medication therapy management, to improve their response to medication, ensuring using pharmacists and other health professionals to really take a deeper look at the medications that the qualified patients are receiving and determining if they're receiving the right medications going forward. So it's taken a fresh look at the MTM benefit that was built into Part D when it was rolled out initially and doing some very innovative things. One role that we at AMCP have played in this among many with two other organizations, the Pharmacy Quality Alliance and the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative, is to help with the documentation side. So we're mapping what's called SNOMED CT codes, which is systematized nomenclature for medicine codes that document clinical services that are being provided. We're mapping those to the services being provided by pharmacists under the MTM benefit. Mm-hmm. So that's a major effort going forward. But we're excited about the enhanced MTM model project and what will come out of that, and looking forward to seeing that MTM benefit further defined and refined, all toward the benefit of Medicare recipients.
Were you seeing particular facets around MTM that they're really kind of trying to focus on? I know it's being done in collaboration with Tabula Rasa Healthcare, some of the technology that they're using that evaluates things like drug-drug interaction and other things. Were there particular facets that they were trying to really drill down and see if we need to change or add or take away?
I think it's just an overall look, and certainly the technology piece and the role that technology can now play in MTM is an important aspect of that. But there are many areas being looked at, and we're monitoring it closely. And as I mentioned, working with CMS when opportunities present themselves, the session yesterday was very well received, and we had a follow-on meeting of our MTM advisory group. So much is happening in this area, and we're closely watching it and trying to facilitate the work as it goes forward.
I've read a piece that you were writing about the way that the benefits managers and organizations have to try to plan ahead around cost and contracting and things like that, and that it's very difficult because you have to wait a long period of time before pharma can release information about new drugs that are coming out, and it makes it very difficult to plan because, from what I understand, the folks that are trying to look at upcoming costs and contract changes have to do so as much as a year to 18 months out, and they don't get access to the actual information from pharma on those new drugs until very close to release or at release. And you had talked about a new idea of the pre-approval of info exchange that would allow some measure of information to flow between those entities that need to be able to have, you know, more real-time information to be able to make good decisions. I thought it was an interesting analogy that you discussed, trying to determine the cost of a car and having to look at it one part at a time and then contact a different individual each time. Talk a little bit about what you're trying to achieve with that. That's pretty interesting.
That's an important issue. Thank you for bringing that up. Very important issue to our members now. Our members on the managed care side brought this forward quite some time ago, and the issue is that in the pre-approval setting, before a product has been approved by FDA for marketing, pharmaceutical companies are very limited as to the information that can be shared with anyone. We're focusing here specifically on the payer side or population health decision makers, but they're very limited from a regulatory perspective as to what can be shared. And the mechanism for sharing it is what's called an unsolicited request. So, for example, if we hear that there is a product in the pipeline for, we'll use the example of hepatitis C, because that was a real example a few years ago that caught so many of our health plans unaware and unprepared, where, as you mentioned, cost data had to be submitted, especially for the Medicare Part D program, well in advance of the start of the plan year. And so all cost information, bid information is submitted, and then you have these surprise products, very important, significant innovations, but costly.
Right.
That come to market in the middle of your plan year, you haven't budgeted for it. And so the reality is there's no money there.
I see. So it's an accessibility problem for the patients in that case. There's a lag
exactly,
time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's one facet, and the most important, certainly, that patients, getting patient access can be limited because of that. So the unsolicited request provides a bit of an avenue to get some information. But under the unsolicited request, the car analogy comes in, where if auto manufacturers were under the same type of regulation, and you know that there's a new car coming to market, you're thinking about buying it, but you don't know how much it's going to cost, so you can't plan for it. And you also don't know what safety features it has, for example. So you ask all the right questions: what kind of seat belts, what kind of airbags. If you didn't think to ask about anti-lock brakes, the manufacturer can't share that information with you. So you have to go back and ask specifically. So it's not an efficient process in the environment in which we're operating today, where payment is so important, coverage is so important, and we have highly innovative but also costly new products coming to market. So what we're looking to have is a safe harbor by which manufacturers can share information with a very limited audience, and that's those involved in the payment of pharmaceutical products, so population health decision makers on the pharmaceutical side that we're calling them. And they can share this information with appropriate guardrails in place, but so that the payers can plan for and begin to formulate coverage concepts or what evidence they'll need to make coverage decisions. Another reason that that's important is not only so they won't be surprised from a cost perspective, but with expedited approval for breakthrough therapies, something that was in our last prescription drug user fee reauthorization package, which is great. It's an expedited way to get new products to market quickly in areas where there are significant unmet medical needs. It's a very important step forward, but often what that means is that you have products coming to market before there is significant evidence published in the medical literature. Perhaps all the phase 3 clinical trial data are not available to the payers. So payers are unable in that type of scenario to make coverage decisions because they don't have significant enough clinical and economic evidence upon which to base their decisions. So we're trying to bridge that gap for the payers, and we're working hard with members of Congress to do that.
And if I was reading it correctly, the article, I got the sense that AMCP was hoping to be somewhat of a, I don't know if an arbiter is the right word, but in the middle a little bit to kind of help prevent some of the nefarious type activities that some of this type of regulation is aiming to avoid.
That's absolutely right. We think the appropriate guardrails must be in place to prevent broad off-label dissemination in to audiences that might not be the right ones to receive this. But on the payer side, we think it's very important that they be able to get not only clinical information, but also economic information.
Now, is this a topic that members of AMCP might want to be contacting particular congressional or government leadership on any level, whether it's state or federal, to talk about this?
So we visited a few weeks ago on Capitol Hill. Members of our board and our committees and our staff spent 2 days on Capitol Hill. Coincidentally, one of those was the day that the Energy and Commerce Committee was marking up the new health care bill. So very interesting time to be on Capitol Hill,
sure,
talking about health care and the cost of pharmaceuticals. But so we're working at more at that level right now. We don't actually have legislation in play,
sure,
for a grassroots effort to take place, but we might in the near future. And so I would say to our members and anyone else who's interested in that topic to stay tuned and watch our website.
And I know that I've got you in the middle of a day that you're pretty booked solid. Are there anything, other topics that might want to throw out there that would be important for your members to know before we let you get back to your day?
Well, it seems like so many of the issues affecting our members are those same issues that we're reading about in the newspaper every day.
Mm-hmm.
Rising cost of pharmaceuticals, the rising cost of healthcare in general, patient access to new innovations. So we're in this time of significant innovation coming to market, which gives us much to look forward to and be excited about. But we also have an affordability crisis in healthcare right now. And if you combine that with the level of uncertainty in our nation's healthcare system right now,
yes,
based on some of the public policy,
yep,
issues and developments that we've seen over the last few weeks, it is a challenging time, and we feel like in many ways managed care pharmacy is right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
We call our fall meeting, which is coming up this fall in October, Nexus. And I think that's appropriately titled, especially.
Now, is that in Dallas?
It's in,
yes,
Dallas. And Nexus this year has a theme of changing the way we pay for healthcare. So some of the topics that you and I have just discussed,
mm-hmm,
value-based contracting, implementation of value-based payments through MACRA and MIPS out of CMS, all of those things are going to be discussed, and they'll be front and center at the Nexus meeting this fall. So in some ways, this meeting was a little bit of a preview, but we're really going to tackle some of those tough issues in Dallas.
Well, it sounds like there are some developments afoot, both within the organization as well as nationally, that would be very useful for members to make sure that they get the Dallas conference in the fall on their calendars so they can see the developments on these and other issues.
We think so.
And it sounds like there's great information on the website. I was able to read some great articles that you were putting out there. You want to share your website and places folks might want to go for other information?
Yes. Thank you for that. We are at amcp.org and would look forward to having anyone visit. We also have our journal, a peer-reviewed scientific journal that includes much of the research coming out of managed care organizations as it relates to the pharmacy benefit, and that is jmcp.org.
Great. I appreciate you taking some time. I know you're very busy today, and I'm really pleased that we got a chance to catch up, and it was a really nice opportunity for us to be able to capitalize. We were in town today and thought it would be great if we were able to connect with some of the folks here with the organization, so I appreciate the opportunity to sit down and talk with you today.
Well, we were delighted to have an opportunity to visit with you and talk about the role that managed care pharmacy plays in helping our healthcare system make wise use of its dollars, so thank you very much.
I look forward to the chance we have opportunity to sit down and talk further about what's going on with all these things we talked about today.
Yes, likewise.
We'll see you then.